John Shaw, he's the executive director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute. He's joining us this morning. First off, morning, John. How are you?
Good morning, Tom. How are you?
Good. How's the transition to Southern Illinois and the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute? Have you made the transition? You know where the bathrooms are at, right?
I do. I've been here for a year, so I've learned. It took me a while to kind of get acclimated with SIU's campus and all, but it's been a fun period, and I feel like we have some good programs going.
John, I'm going to make a confession to you this morning because I think it's important to what you and I are getting ready to speak about. You know, when I do interviews, I do interviews on the federal level, the state and local level. I interviewed everybody during this upcoming election I could get on the air. It was very trying. It just literally, you know, made me want to curl up in the corner and suck my thumb by the time we get to the end because, you know, I believe in civility. And so I strive to always achieve this certain level of civility here that I don't see other places because I think there's a call for it. I think people want it. I think it gives a freer flow of information. The Paul Simon Public Policy Institute, the way I look at what your effort is, it's going to make my life better because you want to return statesmanship to the political arena, not just during campaigns, but how we behave day to day. That is quite the task you've assigned yourself.
It is, and it's born out of my experience. I was a reporter in D.C. for many years. I worked in Springfield, my first job. And the thing that was striking to me as I watched politics unfold both on the national scale and in Illinois over the last quarter century or so is how few leaders have the instinct to ask the big questions, to look to the future, to make the hard decisions, to treat opponents with respect and civility, as you put it. And that's one of the things we're trying to do with the Statesmanship Initiative is just to explain to younger people who haven't really seen high-quality government and remind some of us older folks that we used to do government in a much better and different way. So the initiative is going to be based a lot on just historical examples in both Illinois history and also U.S. history, reminding us that there are better ways to govern than what we're doing right now.
What we're doing now is name calling, and I know social media plays into it, but my personal opinion is it's easier to call each other names than it is to ask the big question and find the solutions to those big questions. It's easier just to be, you know, a bully.
It is. And also, I mean, a critical part of this, what we want to do in this initiative is to challenge a whole new generation of leaders to ask big questions and make decisions that are focused on the future and are based on compassion. But we also want the public to step up, too, and to expect their leaders and to demand their leaders comport themselves in this way. Because cynics would say that, you know, the name-calling and the yelling and screaming that you referred to, however distasteful it is, many of these people are rewarded by getting reelected each time. So it's important for the public to hold its leaders to, I think, a higher standard than we have been doing in recent years.
You know, it's interesting because I talked about this subject with Mike Lawrence, who was with the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute many years, and I asked him why we do the negative advertising, and he simply said, because it works.
That's unfortunately the case. I mean, in a lot of primaries, for example, there's almost a direct relationship between people, you know, pouring money in and doing negative ads on people and their diminished numbers in the polls. So people do it maybe because it works. But one of the things we're trying to do is just to persuade leaders to aspire for a higher level of leadership. I think ultimately it would leave them with legacies that are more satisfying and rewarding. I mean, wouldn't you rather have a relatively short tenure as a leader who's remembered very respectfully than someone who's served for decades but really hasn't done much and has garnered little respect? So we're calling on leaders to take a higher level approach to governance and public policy.
How do you hope to achieve this goal, though, in a practical sense?
Well, you know, I've thought about that a lot because one of the things we're trying to do on a practical sense is, first of all, bring in high-quality speakers to discuss this issue. But we're trying, rather than be very abstract and theoretical, we're trying to provide real-world examples of people who've led in this way. And I think of, as an example, Richard Lugar, a senator from Indiana, 8 or 9 years ago, as a Republican senator, worked with President Barack Obama to get an arms control treaty through the Senate. And a number of his fellow Republicans said, you know, it's a fine treaty, but, you know, it's a Democrat pushing it, don't work with them. And Lugar said, well, it's in the national interest. It's a good for the country to do it. And he did it. And he did it at some political peril. So there have been a lot of examples. And also, I think in Illinois history, Governor Richard Ogilvie in the late 60s was elected and decided that for the level of resources the state needed, he needed to impose an income tax. And he worked with the Illinois General Assembly to get that passed. It came at a significant political price, but I think it helped provide the resources that allowed the Illinois to make investments. So there are real-world examples of people who have stepped up and done big things. And, Tom, we want to look at both the national level and state level, but we're also going to look at local levels and see if there are mayors and city councils who are leading in this way that the public should pay some attention to.
This is a tough one because, you know, I'm a big fan of, in particular, Roman history. And whenever I read Marcus Aurelius's 13 books, he spent a lot of time talking about this very subject. This is not new. You know, I was just talking about this on the air, I think maybe 2 weeks ago when I was reading Gary Eckelbarger's biography of John Logan, that a man in Marion got mad about a political sign, rode his horse to Golconda to kill the person responsible. I mean, you realize this is something we've done. I can't help but wonder at some level if this is just not human nature.
Well, I mean, I think human nature is complicated. I mean, certainly it's easy to take the easy vote, to, you know, pander to the public, to tell people what they want to hear. It is easy. But there are examples, and I think more than we sometimes recall, of people who have been willing to step forward and make hard decisions and think to the future and deal with political opponents in a civil and gracious and respectful way. So it's a harder way of governing. There's no doubt about it, but I think the rewards of taking this approach are so much more substantial. And that's one of the things I want, you know, the students at SIU and folks who passed through the Simon Institute to remember that there is a better way to do both politics and government. And we're trying to show how this has happened, again, not in a highly theoretical sense, but with some real practical examples from state and national history.
You know, we've tried to legislate this to a certain extent. I talked to Mike Bost about this recently. You know, when you're chairing a committee in D.C., if somebody makes a personal attack, you hit the gavel, you know, and, you know, there's a problem. If you want to talk about the issue, you talk about the issue. There are rules about this. I think one of the problems we have is that we don't obey our own legislative rules when it comes to behavior, because we have them, and we have quite a few of them.
We do, and it's interesting because, you know, as I mentioned, I covered Washington for many years, and it's funny, the minority party always calls for regular order, which is kind of full deliberation, debate, et cetera. But then when this minority party becomes a majority party, they oftentimes forget these protocols and traditions. And I think one of the essential aspects of democracy that we sometimes lose track of is it really matters how the process occurs, and winning at all costs, you may slam a bill through, but when you do it in a way that's very aggressive and abrupt and doesn't take account of the minority view, when they become the majority party, they try to unravel all that you've done. So I think better government leads to, I think, better results and more sustainable results. And again, this is a harder way to go. I don't disagree with that, but I think it's something we really have to aspire to. And I think one of the things we really want to do at the Institute is to look at some recent history and show that there is a better way to do things than we are now doing.
It's interesting because, you know, when you were talking about when the minority party then gets into majority, it forgets what it was like being the minority. And, you know, there's a very real outcome to that type of behavior, of forgetting what it's like to be on the other side. And I would hold up gerrymandering of districts as a prime example of that animosity having a real-world negative effect.
Well, I think that's a great, that's a perfect example of one of the real problems that needs to be addressed, because people get into districts in which they are written so it's almost an exclusively Democratic and Republican district, and once they're in office, they have no incentive to work with the other party. In fact, there's a disincentive because they fear that if they do work with the other party, they will get a primary opponent. So there's no doubt that redistricting in its current form is a huge problem. There's been pushes, you know, across the country to have that change. And I think, you know, one of the things the Institute has supported is a fair way of approaching our maps every 10 years. And I think that would go a long way to kind of cleaning up our politics.
I do, especially when you've got a gerrymander, you don't have to be worried and you can go out and be just as aggressive as you want to be without worries about losing an election. It really is a lot, and human nature's being what it is, and then the system too. Best of luck. I see you've got some legislators that have signed on to help, but there's also an expectation of help from the general public and the voters.
That's right, and we want to just remind people that there's a better way to do things, and we really hope to build public support and really raise people's expectations of their leaders, make them want to expect more from their leadership than I think they often do right now.
I mean, you can take a look at the rhetoric. All right, John F. Kennedy, ask not what your country can do for you, ask you what you can do for your country. As opposed to right now where people go out, what do you want for free?
Yeah.
You know, and then you've got the red meat politics. This really is, when you think about politics, this is really a lot more about human nature than I think we're probably comfortable with admitting.
You know, it's like in a lot of things in life, there's an easy way to do things and then oftentimes another way, which is the right way. And there's no doubt that working respectfully with the other party is difficult, and respecting the rights of the minority and allowing them to look carefully at bills and to offer criticisms, it's much easier to just jam a bill through on a party line vote, but the result isn't sustainable. Because the wheel turns, and pretty soon the minority party is going to be the majority party, and they're going to unravel all that you had done if you jam things through. So the process is really important, and I know sometimes people kind of roll their eyes when they hear that, but the sense of being heard and being part of a fair debate, I think even if you're at the losing end of an argument, if you feel like you've been given a fair hearing and a chance to offer your views and offer counter proposals, I think it just sustains the democracy in a way that just is not occurring right now.